And now joining us on the phone lines, how's that for a segue? Joining us now on the phone lines, author of Beyond the Label, A Guide to Unlocking Your Child's Educational Potential. Please, welcome to the program, Dr. Karen Schiltz. Good evening.
Good evening. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
No problem. Karen, I'm glad to have you here, and we'd love to talk about these education and child rearing on the show, among many other things. So tell me, why did you write this particular book?
I wrote this book. Number one, I have a passion for children. I see them every day as far as assessment. And what I discovered over the last 25 years is parents would come to the office and with their 16, 17-year-old children sometimes and would say to me, I wish I knew this information where, you know, when he or she was younger at 5 or 6. Why didn't I have this information? I would have moved on it. I would have gotten help at that time. And so the book was really done to really help parents and even educators understand the warning signs, or what I term them flags, that can indicate a potential problem with their child, and then help them to understand to look beyond the label. And I think that's so important. As a matter of fact, that's part of the table. Title is Beyond the Label, because children with different kinds of diagnoses with regards to achievement and reasoning and social problems may not look the same. So we really have to understand a child's strengths and weaknesses and look at them as far as the big picture of what they're really all about so we can get them appropriate help.
So when around age 5 and 6, it's actually possible to notice these learning, that there are signs of potential learning disabilities and behavioral issues?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, children from 3 to 7-year-old with regard, you know, to reading problems, some of the flags that parents would read about in my book are a family history of difficulties with reading. There may be a delay in speaking. Children that are in kindergarten will have a lot of problems recalling the names of letters, for example. And two, they're beginning to learn to read at that time in kindergarten and first grade. But around kindergarten, when a child's 5.5 to 6 years old, children with that are at high risk for a reading problem will have a lot of trouble decoding simple words and reading simple words. And many parents, really, when they come in, they go, you know, I knew something wasn't quite right. I just knew something was a little off. And I was told, well, John would grow out of it, or Mary would grow out of it. And so there's illusion, for example, with reading problems, the kids will get older and grow out of it, when really, it's at that time when they're in kindergarten, first grade, that we really need to step up and help these kids to lower their, you know, a possibility of getting a reading disorder later on. So, yes, this is so important. And like I said in the book, early intervention is everything. So many of these difficulties can really be cleared up when the child is young.
So this is something, so if this is found early, you can work on these problem areas and they can be overcome, or but it's not going to go away on its own.
Right. And, you know, when we see a flag, it may not indicate there's a big problem. But when you see several flags in a child, it's time really for a parent to keep notice of it. And I have to tell you, parents are right. They just are right. Their gut tells them when something feels a little off. And I have understood this. I've seen this 25, 27 years. Parents may not know what the problem is called, but they definitely know when something's not right. And so many parents don't trust their gut. It may sound simple, but a lot of parents just don't trust themselves. And, you know, I beg parents to really listen to themselves and listen to their child, because there won't be just one flag if something's going on. There'll be several flags that will be going on. And, it's at that time that they really need to go, okay, I don't know what this is called. It may not be a big deal, but I need to consult with the pediatrician first to really understand if it's something that we should attend to.
So really, parents should pay attention if they feel that something is off. They should pay attention to that. They shouldn't just brush that feeling off.
That's right. That's right. And there are three things that I talk about in the book repetitively throughout the whole, throughout all the chapters. There are three things that parents need to be mindful of. In other words, being aware of. Number one is the frequency. Number two is the intensity or severity of the behavior that they're seeing. And number three is the pervasiveness. And what I mean by these three things is, you know, parents have to ask themselves, is the flag, or in other words, is the sign occurring a lot? Okay? We could all have problems with attention and concentration, for example. In California, it's about 20 to 4. You know, I've been up since 5. I'm feeling kind of tired right now. But it's not affecting my ability to work, okay? But if I'm having trouble with attention and concentration day in and day out, and it affects my ability to work, then it probably is a problem. The same with kids. If the parents are noticing trouble with homework, and that homework is taking a super long time, okay, or their child is misplacing things, they're losing things, they're forgetting to hand in papers into the teacher. If the child seems to you know, have trouble not only during homework but at school, and the teachers are concerned in early elementary school, this means that the behavior is frequent. It's happening a lot. The other thing is how bad it is. How bad is it? Is it that influencing, impacting their child's ability to learn within the classroom or show what they truly know on a test? And the other thing is pervasiveness. And like I talked about earlier, are these behaviors showing up at school? Are teachers raising flags about it? Is the parent witnessing it at home? Are they finding that they have to ask their child to do things 10 times? Is the child not following through on certain tasks that they're asking them to do or chores? Are they finding themselves repeating themselves all the time and getting tired in the process? Then, you know, it's time to pay the pediatrician a visit and to really see. And it may be something so simple as getting glasses. I had a case not too long ago where the parents came in on their 8-year-old, and they said Sarah was really having a hard time paying attention. And I said, well, when was the last physical? And they said, oh, about 2.5 years ago. And I said, oh, wait a minute. We need to get that done first before you see me, before I assess her. I really want you to see your doctor and to get just a good physical, you know, taken care of. And lo and behold, in the process, we found out that she needed glasses. She was having trouble with attention and focusing because she couldn't see the board. So something so simple as getting glasses can take care of problems. And some of these reasoning and thinking problems can masquerade as actual medical problems. And that's why I really advise parents to first start with their pediatrician.
So really, the first step is figuring out if there's any health mitigating health circumstances.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's absolutely critical. Absolutely critical.
Which is not necessarily just a prelude to medication, but just to find out if there's a problem like eyesight or some kind of health issue there.
Yes, absolutely. And it's also really important, you know, I talk about beyond the label, because as intervention specialists and as a neuropsychologist myself, I look beyond the label. A child with the same label can be so different in so many ways. For example, a child who has real problems with attention and concentration may not even have a diagnosis of ADHD. We call it attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. It may be the child has problems with language and they have trouble getting their words out. Maybe they have problems with reading and it's just so frustrating to them that they can't seem to hold on their attention. On the other hand, a child could have problems with attention, concentration, reading, and language, and to complicate things more, not all children with ADHD, and the same is true for the autism spectrum, have all the symptoms. So there could be a common thread, but in fact, every child's very unique and have their own weaknesses and strengths. And then on top of it, some kids with attention disorders or ADHD have atypical symptoms that kids with ADHD don't have. For example, in the older child, they can have problems with anxiety, and they notice they're not finishing tests on time. And in grade 5, they're looking around, and they're seeing Isabella or a Michael already done with their tests, and they're only halfway through. And a lot of these kids get so anxious because they're aware. They know what the other kids are doing and whether other kids have completed work. So sometimes that can be a factor as well.
So anxiety can come into play and make a bad situation worse.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you brought that up because, again, early intervention is everything. When kids age, they have more to do. And really that transition from the elementary grades to the middle school is a huge jump, with a child. In middle school, all of a sudden these kids have many classes. They'll have maybe 7, 8 classes, and they'll have different types of teachers even. They're not going to have just one teacher in the classroom. They are going to probably have a locker where they have to go back to their locker, and they have to be mindful and aware of the different books that they need throughout the day. So that takes a lot of planning and organizing, kind of self-monitoring. We call that checking themselves to make sure they have everything. So in middle school, if they're having trouble with executive functioning, and executive functioning is the process of doing, basically it has to do with time management and planning and organizational skills, that's quite independent of what a child knows and their intellectual ability. Middle school really, really, really taxes that function. So if a kid is having trouble with that, what's going to happen is it's going to just spiral, because what typically occurs is their points are going to be docked on the test or their homework because they're forgetting to turn their homework in, and they're feeling bad about it. Most parents will really get after them, and you know, I've had many parents in middle school tell their kids, "You're just lazy. You're not motivated. Come on, you can do it. You can do this." When really the child has significant problems with planning and organization. And then they'll start to get anxious because they know things aren't going quite right and they're confused and they don't know what to do about it. So if we get these problems taken care of later on, it really prevents emotional issues that could happen, such as sadness and anxiety.
So really, the earlier this these issues are discovered and brought to light and are worked on, the better it's going to be.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. Early intervention is everything. And it also prevents, I really feel and think over the years, excessive cost. When I see a child in high school who has reading problems, and I do see children at that age with reading problems that have never been diagnosed, they may be slow readers. They may be able to decode fine and read words fine, but they're slow readers. And, you know, they may be very personable and charming, and teachers like them. Sometimes they can slip through the cracks, but they have trouble reading quickly. These kids can really suffer from lack of confidence and self-esteem, because when you think about it, on a test, everything's usually timed on a test. If they can't get the test done, it's not going to show what they truly know. So some of these kids get so anxious, like I said, and when they come in, there are more difficulties to deal with and more people to add to an intervention team to help the children. So I believe in early intervention. I think that's really where we need to fully concentrate on, is in the elementary school, to get these kids help. And parents are really the anchor point of all of this. Teachers and I and other neuropsychologists and psychologists can be satellites around a child and help them, but it's really the parents. The parents are the chief advocate, and I say they're the anchor point to really help their child.
So it's really important that parents be involved in the process, and well, in your case, you're advocating that they head up the process.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's why I wrote the book. I wrote the book not so much looking at labels. I look beyond that to educate parents what executive functioning problems are, what memory problems can look like. And it's not only, you know, for the child with difficulties in school. For example, children who have head injuries may have problems with memory and processing information. And the parents aren't aware of this. So the book is really to educate people on what are the common signs, what are the common things that kids can suffer from that, you know, may not even be seen at home but be seen primarily in the classroom, to really help parents get on the same page. Because they really are the ones. Parents are, I really, when they come in, they're always correct. And like I said, they may not know what something is called, and they won't know how to get help in all ways. But the fact that when they do know what is going on, they just don't know what is being called, and that's where it all starts.
So parents need to be educated and have an idea of what this might be and know where to find help.
Right, and what I advocate in the book is to start with a pediatrician. That's important. And like we talked about earlier, the basics need to be done first. You know, does your child need glasses? Does your child need a hearing aid? Is there something going on physically with a child that's affecting their ability to access the curriculum in the classroom and on tests? Once that's taken care of and everything is fine, then we can really begin to understand if the child is a reading problem or a social problem. We can really understand how to get them help. And assessment's critical also. For example, a child with a reading problem often have difficulties with attention. They'll have trouble with language. And it's very important to get a full assessment to not only understand your child's weaknesses, but also the full picture in terms of the strengths. Because it's the strengths that's just as important as the weakness to really know about. The strengths will help intervention specialists, for example, speech-language pathologists, help a child with social difficulties. There's what we call children's friendship training that are social skill groups that involve parents as well to help teach parents peer etiquette. And when these group leaders understand the profile of a child and understand the whole picture, then they can really use the child's strengths within the group setting or in a speech-language pathology setting, for example, to help the child. So that's critical, absolutely critical.
Great. Well, for people who would like to find more information about this, do you have a website for the book?
Yes. The website is www.karenschiltz.com, and it's KarenSchiltz. They can also Google Oxford University Press. And Oxford University Press launched my book, and I do have two co-authors. I want to definitely mention them, Dr. Amy Schoenfeld and Dr. Tara Nydam. And they launched the book in September of 2011. And readers can also, parents can also access their website as well as Amazon.com is selling it in Barnes & Noble as well.
Great. So people can find more information there. Again, the name of the book is Beyond the Label, A Guide to Unlocking Your Child's Educational Potential. Karen Schiltz, thank you for joining us on the program tonight.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
Great. And I think this pretty much brings us up to the end of the lowdown. So, Karen, if you can just hang on the line and I'll talk to you in a second. We will actually be back on Monday night, and we'll have lots of Oscar news as well as some other good things. And good night.
Good night.
Good night.